Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
They all have the potential to become a Fukushima.
According to our guest, journalist Michael Steinberg, Fukushima is the final warning about the troubled global nuclear power industry. His report by that name appears in Z Magazine, and we'll link to it on our website. If you watch Japanese public TV, NHK, you know that Japan's nuclear power company, TEPCO, has said they hope to begin removing fuel rods from plants that melted down in early 2014. The goal is to finish by the end of 2016. Yet even this plan is uncertain as a time frame to decommission the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. Meanwhile, both TEPCO and the entire nuclear industry of Japan are being financially bailed out by their government. At the worst possible time in the crisis, the global media has pulled away from the story, even as news that radiation levels spiked to a new record high in August hit the media. We still didn't see intensive global coverage. The New York Times has, however, published an extensive report on the failures of the Japanese government to focus on responding to the radiation leak in March. TEPCO and the government centering their attention instead on potential economic damage. Within the past week, we've seen global markets rise in response to claims that damage to Japan's economy was not as bad as had been thought. It's an absurd take, according to those who have been monitoring this story in the independent media. They say we're at a critical moment in the effort to save lives, especially the children. The people of Japan are now appealing for international attention to the problem and for help. At the website for the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, NIRS.org, you can now sign a petition to protect Japan's children, as the extent of contamination to soil, food, air, and water are only now being partially revealed by the Japanese government. Here's a portion of a broadcast by the Australian broadcast network ABC.
Before the nuclear meltdown, the children of the Sakura Nursery School would spend much of their time playing outside. But after a recent test of 10 Fukushima children found radioactive substances in all of them, outdoor activities have been banned.
Japanese parents and teachers at these schools increasingly frustrated with the government of Japan, according to the Australian television network.
Children and babies are said to be vulnerable to radiation, but the authorities have moved too slowly to help schools.
One measure taken by the government was to raise the radiation limit from 1 to 20 millisieverts a year, a move that did nothing to reassure anxious parents or teachers.
Finally, journalist Dar Jamil has reported to Al Jazeera that volunteers with Geiger counters found 500,000 radiation points across Japan, radioactive particles found in beef and seafood, and Greenpeace found that all 21 of their samples of fish caught about 50 kilometers off Fukushima exceeded the maximum levels of cesium. And NHK TV also reporting that scientists in a marine sub have found a new 80-kilometer fissure off the coast of Fukushima. They believe it was caused by the earthquake. Michael Steinberg is a veteran activist and writer. He's author of Millstone and Me, Sex, Lies, and Radiation. Michael Steinberg, thank you for joining us to talk about this continuing emergency.
Thank you.
Have you had the concern that many Americans would find your article in Z Magazine kind of extreme because they don't have all the facts about what's really going on?
Definitely we don't know all the facts because the media isn't telling us the whole story, because the media, even the mainstream media, doesn't know the whole story. Even the Japanese government, I don't think, knows the whole story, nor does the utility operating the Fukushima reactors. This is an unprecedented situation. We have had very bad nuclear power plant catastrophes before, Tsushima Island, Chernobyl, others lesser known, but it was involved one reactor. Now, this one, there's three, four, maybe all six of them, all at the same time, all with an earthquake that was not supposed to happen, not supposed to be that strong. The whole thing wasn't supposed to happen, but it did happen. And so, therefore, everybody's still reeling, trying to figure out what to do about it. We do know that Units 1 through 3 suffered complete meltdowns, which was withheld from us for months. why I call it the final warning. So people might not agree with that or put it in those terms, but it's just such a big mess, we're not going to know the full consequences for years, maybe decades, and that's the story, basically.
And Michael Steinberg, I noticed that you very carefully went through and discussed previous warnings, and those had to do with the NRC, too, not known to be a particularly harsh agency in terms of regulation today. However, there were warnings from the NRC, and there were also warnings from seismologists, and there were people very concerned about these aging plants that you describe, built, of course, in 1967 by Tokyo Electric, and GE made the model for these plants. Now, just go through the warnings, because I think a lot of people are unaware that these safety concerns existed well before this catastrophe.
As you mentioned, the NRC issued a warning, and now are even more concerned, I hope, that nuclear power plants situated in seismically active areas, as seismic activity around the Pacific Rim especially seems to be intensifying. And the Fukushima plants were singled out by the meeting of the G8 countries, one that dealt with nuclear safety, and they were issued in diplomatic terms of a stern warning that they really need to take that reality into consideration. All those plants were actually shut down because of corruption and cover-ups involving TEPCO, the company that owns and operates the Fukushima reactors, and only opened up, I think, maybe a year or two before the earthquake hit. It was something that had been put out to the nuclear industry on a global level, not just by the NRC, but by the G8 nuclear safety group. But obviously, not much was done by the utility. And in reality, I don't know how much they could have done, because the plants were not designed to withstand an earthquake of that size. Once again, unprecedented. So it basically calls into question, like, can these plants ever be made safe?
You talk about 1990, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission pointing to a risk of loss of cooling at nuclear plants in, quote, seismically very active areas.
The nuclear industry likes to say, we have defense in depth. We have, for instance, in the coolant situation, they have to be, the nuclear fuel has to be constantly cooled, as does the spent fuel pools, or else if it heats up, the water will start boiling, the water can boil off, fuel rods will start melting down, releasing very large quantities, lethal amounts of radioactivity. So this is a loss of coolant accident, as the industry calls it, or the thing, as we learned once again at Fukushima, that are most likely to happen if there's a really bad accident. And this has been known for many, many years. I'm originally from Connecticut, southeastern Connecticut, where the Millstone nuclear plants are, and we had a big battle there in the 90s. And one of the things we're most concerned about was that those plants were out of control. They weren't being maintained by the Northeast utilities who owned them at the time. And I chronicled a whole series of accidents in a book I called Millstone and Me. I wrote a whole chapter called Most Likely to Melt Down. And at the Millstone plants back in those mid-90s, there were a whole series of accidents that could have led to a meltdown and loss of coolant preceding that. So this is something endemic in the industry from the beginning, and it's still a problem. It's one of those problems that people who question the safety of nuclear power could point to a long history of. And so at Fukushima, it was a similar situation. Fukushima number one has the GE Mark IV, I think it's called, reactor. Well, Millstone Unit 1 has the exact same one, and so do a couple dozen other ones in the U.S. And a number of them are situated on seismically active areas, such as I'm out in San Francisco these days, and California has the Diablo Canyon right on the Pacific Ocean, as well as San Onofre further south. And there's a lot of concern in California right now, heightened awareness because of Fukushima, because the tsunami did reach the coast of California and caused a lot of damage in Santa Cruz and further up the coast. So all nuclear power plants, and this have to be situated on a body of water that's drawn on to for the coolant that we've been discussing, and also to discharge when they're done using it. So it's endemic in the design that they have to be located where there's a source of water, and especially ones that are located on oceans and rivers, they all have the potential to become a Fukushima.
And what do you mean by discharge? Are you talking about some sort of release that the company would plan to do routinely, or are you talking about an extraordinary situation?
No, these are routine. The water is routinely sucked into the plant to be used as coolant, and then it's routinely discharged out into the same source of water when they're done using it. For instance, at the Millstone plant in southeastern Connecticut, it's called Millstone because it was previously becoming a nuclear power plant. It was a big granite quarry, and so what they now call the discharge canal there is what was formerly the quarry. And so before 911, you could go out there at the Millstone Point and fish. And if you went out there, you would see the huge surges of water going out all the time. Now, sometimes they also, as they call, routinely release radioactivity that's in a liquid form out into these same bodies of water, which is another problem because of its effect on the environment.
Really, as you go through this article of yours, you realize all the opportunities that societies and organizations that are supposed to be watching this kind of power industry, you know, they had these opportunities to use the situation at hand, not only to warn, but to regulate and to make certain that their warnings were heeded for the sake of the Earth and all of its species. And so where you see this cable, for example, in 2008, you know, a cable that you cite from the U.S. Embassy in Japan that WikiLeaks released revealed that the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, had castigated Japan's nuclear industry at a meeting of the G8 Nuclear Safety and Security Group in December of that year. And so what they were charging was, and you're quoting them, safety guides for seismic safety have only been revised by the industry 3 times in the past 35 years. Well, obviously, anyone who knows anything about, you know, how an industrial plant works, I think those revisions and those upgrades are supposed to take place regularly, right? But what you're saying is that recent earthquakes in some cases have exceeded the design basis for some nuclear plants. A serious problem, that according to the IAEA. And if you get right down to it, what the Japanese company and the government were doing was just watching these threats go by every year and not responding to them.
Yeah, they basically just blew it off. Unfortunately, I don't think that's very unusual in the nuclear industry worldwide. For instance, Diablo Canyon, I mentioned a little bit before, on the Central California coast. Similarly, they haven't updated their vulnerability to earthquakes and being in an earthquake-prone area for some number of years also, and they also are in the process of applying to extend their operating license for another 20 years, which most of the nuclear plants in the U.S. are doing. A lot of them have got it already. Millstone has already got it. And now they're hung up on that because of what happened at Fukushima. Now they're being forced to respond and update their, for instance, modeling of possible seismic activity in that area, but only because of public outcry because of what happened at Fukushima. Otherwise, they would just blow it off, too.
And the media, again, you cite an AP report on March 15th that noted that Unit 2 at this TEPCO plant had blown a 26-foot hole in the building and damaged a vessel below the reactor, but not the reactor core. You had that in quotes, meaning the American people didn't realize that this was going to be perhaps one of the largest radiation leaks in history. And it was ongoing already at that time. So how would you characterize these failures to provide information at key times, whether it's about safety warnings that the company was getting going back for many years, or about this incident itself where there was no media pressure on TEPCO to reveal what was actually happening on a regular basis? And so essentially, it wasn't until last week, for example, that people in Japan or the rest of the world knew that the decision-making process had taken so long about whether or not to pump seawater in to cool the reactors that they missed a key opportunity to avoid this kind of meltdown, right? So this was recently released information, and had it been known, you know, like, say, the first few weeks, perhaps an outside entity could have stepped in and, if not taken over, at least given them technical assistance immediately on the ground, right?
That's possible. We have to remember that the whole development of nuclear power grew out of the nuclear weapons industry, which is used to operating in complete secrecy from the public. That's the culture. And that culture was passed on to the nuclear power industry, even though they are supposed to have regulatory organizations. They exist more in league with the nuclear power plants than a separate entity that actually oversees them. So the whole culture of keeping information from the public, keeping information from the regulatory commissions and such, that's the way they're used to operating. And the whole idea of, as I mentioned in the article, talk about the Atoms for Peace program that began the development of nuclear power in the back in the 50s because of the fears that were the pictures of what happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki came out. People started to realize what really happened there and how horrible it was. At the same time, the governments, nuclear governments around the world were trying to promote the development of bigger and worse nuclear weapons. So they tried to, shall we say, make an end run around those fears and such by promoting the nuclear powers, our friend the atom by Walt Disney, which I mentioned, the whole campaign of reassurance that nuclear could be a good thing. At the same time, of course, who was developing the nuclear power for electricity? It was the utilities, but it was also a lot of people that came out of doing that work in the military and worked in secrecy. Nobody bothered them. And so that's the culture that developed. It still exists. To go back to Millstone again, because I know the most about that plant, a lot of people would work, like the major industries in that area, submarine base there, General Dynamics Electric Boat that builds almost all the nuclear submarines for the Navy. Those are the people that went to work at Millstone. So it's this culture of secrecy, and also they are, have a smug kind of attitude. We know better, we're the experts, and so shut up and let us do our work. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but there definitely is that kind of culture around the whole nuclear establishment, weapons and nuclear power.
You also point out that even as the Associated Press was reporting on a fire at Unit 4's spent fuel pool, this is a disaster in nuclear plant operation terms, right? To have your fuel on fire is a nightmare.
Yeah.
During that time when radiation was directly released into the atmosphere and into the oceans too, U.S. Secretary of Energy Stephen Chu told reporters on Capitol Hill, quote, construction license applications pending at the NRC to build new nuclear plants in the U.S. should proceed. What does that tell you about what we have to take on here?
Well, it tells us there's a big mess. When somebody could, you know, high government official could come out and make that statement while multiple meltdowns are happening at a nuclear power plant, it shows, like, which side they're on. You know, they're on the side of the nuclear industry totally. And so one of the tragedies of the Obama administration has been how many of the Bush policies they adopted, and certainly with the nuclear power, that's very clear. So, you know, there's an election coming up next year. I don't know what kind of choices we're going to have, but that's, you know, that's one level of taking action. But I think more importantly is organizing in our local communities, first of all, and then networking to create community pressure in any way that we can to try to affect these insane things that are going on. Not going to be easy, but the consequences are going to be worse if we don't do anything.
What we're talking about is, you know, society at large not believing that there's any choice in the matter. Nuclear power or nothing to power our major cities and to make up for the growing need for energy. So that's why I think people heard that the Obama administration wanted $3.6 billion in loan guarantees for new nuclear utilities. And then, of course, they failed to pay back those loans, the U.S. taxpayers have to pay that money. You say this is like a prepaid bailout.
Yeah.
People just accepted it, I think. I mean, there wasn't a major outcry other than amongst those who were studying the industry and asking questions like, do we really need this?
Right. The whole new nukes thing actually started back in the Bush administration, and those, I remember those secret meetings Dick Cheney had with energy industry types. And one of the things that came out of that was, they call it the Nuclear Power 2010 program, with the promoted building new nuclear plants. And they wanted to have a couple dozen or something like that by 2010, which we know hasn't happened. And, well, Wall Street doesn't want to loan them the money because it's too risky. And so that's why they came up with these guaranteed loan things, which they haven't been able to pull off. They got some money to build the plants in Georgia, which they haven't broken ground on. But that whole culture, and another part of the culture, is believing they're all powerful, and we've got it all under control, and nothing can happen. That's all really been being challenged now by Fukushima. So we see Germany is going to phase out their nuclear plants. Italy just voted not to have any more nuclear plants there. And so there's been some major changes of consciousness, which the nuclear powers and their partners in crime, we'll call them, trying to do everything they can to put out all kinds of propaganda. And the Secretary of Energy here in the U.S. right after Fukushima came out in a statement that everything's safe here, and we're going to go on with our program to build new nuclear plants. But they haven't been able to get any money out of Congress, which has been the case most of the time. They did get some for the, like, $9 billion or something for the ones in Georgia. But because there's a heightened consciousness now, I think it's really important for everybody concerned to focus on trying to stop any new nuclear plants being built in the U.S. And in my opinion, they really should all be phased out as soon as possible. But in the meantime, we found with the situation with Millstone, which is an area that's very pro-nuclear traditionally, that when a public outcry was raised, we did get one of the three shut down. And just the increased scrutiny forced the nuclear industry to spend more money and at least make them look like they're doing something to deal with the unsafe conditions. So it's a really key time right now for people to get together and work as community groups, work with we have some good national groups. For instance, Beyond Nuclear and NIRS at IRS.org, beyondnuclear.org, that they're doing a lot of good work. They have been doing for years. Also Public Citizen out of D.C. And in your local No Nukes groups, it's really important to get together and create as much public pressure as we can to try to get these things out of our lives forever. But Fukushima affects not only Japan primarily, but the radiation, as we know, came across the Pacific and hit the West Coast about a week after March 11th when the earthquake happened. And we've documented here high amounts of radioactive iodine found in Berkeley. And as it turns out, the Pacific Northwest, a recent study by the Radiation and Public Health Project, which is radiation.org, found subsequent to the radiation reaching the United States, there has been a 35% increase in infant mortality in 8 Pacific Northwest cities. They also found that Philadelphia had a 48% increase in infant mortality over that same period. So it's nothing compared to what's going on in Japan, you might say, but to the families who suffered those losses, it's a very big thing. And I'm sure similar things are unfortunately are happening all over Asia. We know the radiation reached Europe, similarly to Chernobyl circling the globe, especially in March and April. So people are mobilizing around the world, and so the pressure is going to continue in this country because the plants are still operating. They want to build new ones, but they haven't really been able to build any new ones. So and the public pressure and those groups I mentioned, organizing people has a lot to do with their failure to be able to build the nuclear plants now. We have a battle, as I'm sure you know, in Vermont over the Vermont Yankee reactor there, which is 40 years old, where the state has voted to not extend its license, which is going to expire next year. And now the owner of it, Entergy, from actually their headquarters in New Orleans, they are going to file a lawsuit saying the federal law predominates over the state law. So there's a big battle brewing there. Also around the Indian Point reactors that are about 30-some miles north of Manhattan.
And Michael Steinberg, how far do you think they've come in establishing the link between this infant mortality rate spike and the contamination from Fukushima?
At this point, the studies that were done by the Radiation and Public Health Project are just very preliminary, just the very first look at it. And what they're doing is using information from MMWR, Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report by the CDC. There definitely need to be more studies to see if it was a temporary thing or if it's continuing, but it's just the first thing. And the unfortunate part of that is that, similar to the fact that we can't trust the nuclear utilities or the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, we can't trust the EPA. They stepped up the testing for March and April, and then they went back to their regular once every 3 months. We can't trust, by and large, our public health officials because they're not going to do these studies. They're not doing these studies. They keep saying everything's safe, there's no problem, but they're not looking at the evidence. So I trust the Radiation and Public Health Project much more than I do any of the governmental officials that are supposed to be doing this work. They have to do it by default because the government isn't really doing anything except participating in the propaganda campaign of the nuclear industry. It's really a kind of a survival response to try to know something is really dangerous. It's lethal. It can last for more time than we can conceive of. It can mutate our genes and create all kinds of things we can't conceive of. So why do we keep putting it out into the environment when it really only affects some high-level corporate owners? If we want to survive, we have to get together and do the work that the government is supposed to be doing for us, unfortunately. And it's very difficult in a social reality where people are losing their homes, foreclosures, so unemployment is still really high. But being from Connecticut and southeastern Connecticut, and which was such a conservative, pro-nuclear, pro-military area, and seeing how the people there got together in the 90s, and they weren't like rabid anti-nuclear activists. These were just people from the community who had safety questions about Millstone, and ended up all of them being shut down for 2 years. Story being on the cover of Time magazine in February of 2006. One of them, which was the worst one, the oldest one, Unit 1, shut down permanently. The job's not done there, and our job isn't done anywhere, but we want to have life, human life, continue on this planet. It's up to the majority of the people to get together and create our own democratic solution.
Journalist Michael Steinberg is author of Fukushima, The Final Warning, published in Z Magazine. He is a veteran activist and writer and author of the book Millstone and Me, Sex, Lies, and Radiation, about Connecticut's controversial nuclear power plant. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions about the content you just heard. Write to us at TalkNationRadio@gmail.com. Thank you.